Today's episode of Who Weekly is brought to you by The CW. New series Naomi airs Tuesdays at 9, 8 central, or you can stream free next day on The CW app.
You or Jayla? Yeah. They wanna know.
To be famous.
Welcome to Who Weekly, the podcast where you'll learn everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. I'm Bobby Finger.
I'm Lindsay Weber.
And the biggest movie of 2022 finally has a trailer.
It's actually tall news.
Tall Girl 2, the sequel to the movie that bravely asked, what if a girl was tall?
Truly, as a tall person, do you feel excited by this sequel representation-wise?
As a tall white man, I feel like I'm underrepresented in the movies.
Yeah.
Short white men are represented all over the place. Average height white men are represented everywhere. But as a tall white man, you know, we really...
I can't tell if you're
joking or not. I'm totally joking.
I actually can't.
I'm totally joking. I'm just like, who do we have? Vince Vaughn? Benedict Cumberbatch?
Will this movie finally answer the question that I've been wanting for this entire tall girl rollout? Are they making other people shorter to make her taller? Or is she actually that tall compared to the other actors? Like, you know how they famously put Tom Cruise on an apple box? Is she walking on stilts? Like, I truly, and I don't mean that, like, you can't be this tall, but I want to know if it's an optical illusion that we're dealing with here.
I think she actually just is that tall. Can you guess how tall she is? Ava Michelle, the star of Tall Girl?
What's unfortunate is that women are so expected to be tall that I'm sure she's not even that tall. Is she like 6'4"?
She's 6'2".
That's crazy. It's like not even that tall.
How tall are you again? 5'4"?
Oh, I'm 5'3".
5'3".
We're just like out here begging men to be 6 foot or over, and you get mad when a girl is 6'2"? Like, that's crazy.
I mean, that's high school. It's about the struggles of being a tall girl in high school. Can you guess how tall Steve Zahn is, who plays her dad?
5'8" at most.
You're half correct. I mean, you're correct because he is 5'7". So 5'8" at most is correct. Can you guess how tall Angela Kinsey is, who plays her mother?
I mean, 5'5".
5'1".
Oh,
5'1" plus 5'7" equals 6'2". Can you guess how tall Sabrina Carpenter is, who plays her sister?
5'3". Is she like 5 feet?
People can't really come to an agreement on how tall Sabrina Carpenter is.
Okay.
CapitalFM.com says that she's 4'9". CelebHeightWiki.com says that she's 5'0". And Celeb Health Magazine says that she's 5'1". So let's call her 5 foot nothing. How about that?
Let's call her 5 foot.
She's 5 foot.
I knew she was a shorty.
And what if Olivia Rodrigo had said, you're probably with that short girl. Yeah. Tall Girl 2 synopsis. Let's see what it's about. Jodie Kramen deals with her newfound popularity. Her miscommunications, however, start causing rifts with those around her, and now she really needs to, quote, stand tall. You're listening to Who's There, a weekly call-in show where we take your questions, comments, and concerns at 619 who them. Let's start with comments. This is actually neither question nor comment, but it's essential is what it is.
Guys, I am literally calling you from work to tell you about this Yelp review I just saw for a gym in Los Angeles called Mansion Fitness. One of the reviews is 1 out of 5 stars, and it says they shot a porn here during the middle of the day in the boot camp room, and it goes on to explain about the porn. And the business owner responded, And this is what the first paragraph says. I'm truly sorry you did not have a great experience here. As owner of the gym, I strive to meet every client's needs personally. The porn you mentioned that was shot in our gym was actually R&B superstar Tinashe's photo shoot, and we were honored to have her. And then it links to the photo shoot, and I just thought of you guys right away, so felt like this might entertain you. All right. Crunch.
Tinashe did not shoot a porn in the Mansion Gym in Los Angeles, California. She shot a photo shoot.
Not to be rude, but don't they shoot porn everywhere in LA? Like, I don't watch enough porn to know about like locations and have them come up multiple times. But I assume if you're watching kind of at a certain level porn, you're going to start to see repeats of locations.
You're going to say that's the Mansion
Gym. You're going to see some people's Airbnb houses. Yeah. You're going to see some of those places they sold on Selling Sunset.
Oh, I think I saw Tinashe work out there. Like, and if they do shoot porn in there, it wasn't while Tinashe was there. Tinashe was doing a photo shoot. The photo shoot was from fall 2014. I couldn't find it anywhere because the link that Derek I, who owns the business, posted is no longer active. It was tinashemusic.com/, you know, a bunch of gibberish. But I do trust that it was indeed a photo shoot. And I mean, Tinashe in a gym. I can visualize that easily.
Yeah, she's jumping on a little trampoline.
Yes, she's very active. She's physical. Okay. Right. Okay, next call. Great call. Thank you.
Hey, Who Weekly. Medium time, first time. I had to pause the pod on Friday when you were talking about Anthony's missing award because it turns out that I have a friend who has a mutual best friend with Anthony's boyfriend. Sorry, a little complicated. But long story long, I was able to get the message to them, and it turns out it wasn't a Golden Globe or an Emmy like we thought. It's actually an MTV Moon Man. So hopefully this is the first step in getting it back to him because the story is true and they've been looking for it everywhere. So figured you'd like an update. Hopefully we can work on getting these Moon Man and Anthony back together. Yeah, so that's it. Lindsay Podcaster, crunch, crunch.
I want to be very clear. Mm-hmm. We want nothing more than to reunite Anthony with this fucking statue. I hope that's clear. Like, we're giggling mm-hmm. our way through this process, but I want it to be very, very clear that I really would like to get this back to him, right? Like, this is not satisfying to me unless we make this happen.
Unless there is a photo of the Moon Man in Anthony's house.
In his hands, even. I would love that. Okay, so we have reached out to both parties. I will say a lot of people who listen to this podcast have a connection to Anthony. I don't know what that says about our podcast, but everyone's like, I happen to know him. I'm like, a lot of you happen to know him.
A lot of people know Anthony, and Anthony is confirmed aware of this.
I'm not surprised that he's only like a few connections away, you uh-huh. know, barely one connection away. Uh-huh. He's aware. We're aware. We reached out to the original caller. They're trying to source the person who told them the story. We're trying to get it together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're working our fucking hardest to get it together.
We really are. And we're almost there. I think we're almost there.
I hope so. We have to get in touch with that original person.
We also got this call, which I love.
Hey, Lindsay, Bobby. So this is like literally nothing, but I have good news for the person who has Anthony Porofsky's Emmy, or the person whose friend has it, or their friend. Basically, like, it's not illegal if it's not USPS to open mail. So, like, there's no way that the Emmys or the Golden Globes or whatever, like, mailed it via USPS, like they FedExed it or they UPSed it. So, like, you can open it. You can do whatever you want with it because they're not the government and you can't be charged with laws, I think. I don't know. I'm also not a lawyer. I'm 22 and didn't graduate college, but I don't know. That's what I read somewhere at one point. Lindsay Podcaster, crunch, crunch. Bye.
You heard it here first. A 22-year-old who is not a lawyer says that they're pretty sure you can open up a UPS or FedEx package or LaserShip and that it's not illegal.
You can't argue that this isn't the essence of the show and that we encourage calls like this by our tone and our own, like, not expertise, you mm-hmm. know? A 22-year-old mm-hmm. calling and saying, I know nothing, I've learned nothing, I'm barely born, but here is how this works is, like, the essence of our show, mm-hmm. you know?
Exactly.
So thank you to that 22-year-old.
I cannot speak to the illegality or legality of opening someone else's UPS, FedEx, or DHL package, but the law that I was citing, it's a federal crime to open someone's mail, explicitly and exclusively refers to USPS mail. So I was referencing a law that only applies to USPS.
Right, and that itself is kind of a misnomer because I feel like it gets tossed around very casually, like it's illegal to open someone else's mail, but it's not quite the full story. Mm-hmm. Not that you should be going around opening people's mail, but if you are delivered something by accident, you want to get it back to the right person, sometimes you got to get in there.
I got someone's package once, like my upstairs neighbors. I just got the package, opened it up, looked inside, and I was like, what the hell is this? And I don't even remember what it was, but it was an Amazon box. And I was like, oh no, I opened up someone's Amazon box. And I had to like tail between my legs, walk upstairs and be like, hi.
But that's like standard. Everyone has the same box. They all look the
really
same.
It was really awkward. They were annoyed. They didn't. They were very... I don't,
something embarrassing?
I don't know. I don't even remember what it was. Like I opened it up and it was just like, I don't remember. It was, there was another box inside the box. You know how Amazon puts a box inside a box and it's surrounded by like plastic?
Well, it's, you know, the real, I'm just trying to think of the last thing I ordered on Amazon that I wouldn't want a neighbor to accidentally open and have to give back to me. And like, there are various, once in every five Amazons, there's something truly appalling that I don't need them to see, you know?
Truly appalling. Well, this wasn't, I would have remembered if this were appalling. I don't even remember what it was. I was just like, I didn't order this. It was something weird that I very, very obviously didn't order. And when I walked upstairs, I was like, I'm so sorry, but I was expecting a package today. When this came to my door, I just opened it and I quickly realized it wasn't mine. So here it is. I'm so sorry. They were very clearly bothered. I thought that they would maybe laugh it off like, ha ha ha, don't worry about it. But it was like, oh, you opened it? It was something like that. You opened it? And I was like, yeah, but I thought, ugh.
Only you get these, find these people in your world.
I'm starting to realize that this is probably a me problem, not just like a coincidence.
It's probably not, but
what
I
sort
do,
of energy am I putting out to the world?
Well, it's not you. It's not, in this situation, it's in this scenario, it's not you, but I can't imagine somebody not being like, oh, that's funny. Bye, neighbor. Like,
you know why? You know why? You know what the problem is?
Why?
This is tall boy problems.
I'm
this
just is tall say, boy. Because you're too
this
tall.
This is tall boy three. Tall boy three. I am too tall and people find me unpleasant and untrustworthy.
That's not true. That's tallness is not associated with untrustworthiness.
I don't know.
You can't make that up.
No, I don't know.
Honestly, you guys, I feel like Tall 2 was prematurely greenlit. Bobby had an amazing narrative for you on Tall 2, and you
dare
didn't come
you speak
to
the problems of tall people as a non-tall person. Okay? Don't speak for me. Miss 5'4". Oh, God.
Me?
So rude.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, who's 5'4"? Me?
You.
I'm 5'3". I'm 5'3".
Miss 5'3".
Don't give me an inch
more. Don't act like
more.
You know the plight of the tall boy.
Oh my God. I can't wait for Tall Girl 3.
Me coming soon to like Barry Weiss's Substack. Me complaining about being tall. Bobby, I heard your recent episode of Who Weekly and I feel like you have the perfect voice for like a column. my insane pivot.
But it would be really funny because it would just be you getting into situations that have nothing to do with your height.
Right,
like you'd
no,
be
exactly.
You could be like, I went to the coffee shop and they were slightly rude to me and I know it's because I'm tall. And everyone's like, what?
Hi, Lindsay Bobby, long time, medium time. I'm calling to ask, do you know if Kwame Onwuachi from Top Chef and Yvonne Orji are dating? I follow Kwame on Instagram, and I noticed that they kind of tag each other a lot in their stories and whatnot. So I was wondering if there was anything going on there. Also, I don't know if you guys watch the show, but love to know who your favorite Top Chef contestants are and who do you think is the veniest of all the Top Chef contestants. Love to hear your thoughts. Crunch, crunch.
I haven't watched Top Chef in so long, which is a big
really?
Problem of mine. Who are the veniest Top Chefs? You got the Voltaggio brothers. You got Carla Hall.
You got Melissa. It's hard because it's like who has broken out into their own thing. They all kind of have like restaurants and our things.
I think Carla's way up there.
Well, because she got the job on the talk show.
She got the talk show job. I think the Voltaggio brothers are just good personalities.
Richard Blaze, who now hosts All Stars.
And you got the hair.
Like, right? I feel like the most famous people from Top Chef are the judge, are the hosts still, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you weren't asking that question.
They asked if Kwame and Yvonne Orji of Insecure fame, and now she hosts that dating show called My Mom, Your Dad.
Wait, what?
It's like watching your parents. There's something Goggleboxian about it, but then you watch your parents go on dates.
Your own parents.
Your own parents.
With each other.
So it's like kids who have single parents say,
Oh,
I want my
parents.
Mom. Yeah, it's like I want my mom to go on a date and then they find a match and then that's another single parent. And then the kids watch the dates happen
together.
Together.
The kids of the parents.
The kids of the parents. Ooh, so that's her
like
new thing.
Fucked up Brady Bunch shit.
It's actually sort of cute. I watched the first
episode.
Here's
the thing about this caller. I think they know something that we don't know because I searched them both on Twitter thinking like, oh, people are going to be asking this question as well. If you're asking it, other people are asking it. Not one mention of both of their names in this context. And the only reasons you might think this are, you know, a while ago when she had a stand-up special, an HBO special, this was like quite maybe
almost
a year
ago
at this point, he did an Instagram that was like, so proud of my friend for the premiere of her comedy special, Mama, I Made It, blah, 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 blah. Then more recently, this is from November 2021, there's a photo of them. That's four people, two are their friends, two are them. He's got his arm like slung around her, but not necessarily. Bobby thinks they're fucking because Bobby thinks.
Well, I don't think they're fucking because she's a virgin famously.
Okay, but that has nothing to do with this.
But I think they might be in a relationship.
Okay, I don't think so.
It's gone from support my friend by watching her stand-up special to I'm at a Jets game with two. Like, it looks like a double date. There's a man and a woman who are not identified in the photo.
You're
and then
being
Yvonne or
very heteronormative right now.
I know, but that's what happens when I see heterosexual people.
I think you're letting your heteronormative brain run wild on this one. Sees a man, a woman, and is like, two couples dating.
A man, a woman, a man, a woman at a Jets game. Okay, I'm allowed. A man, a woman, and a man and a woman who are on record as being heterosexual, I'm allowed to say there's something heterosexual about this.
And if this game wasn't heterosexual enough, you know who was also there? BB Rexha.
Wearing a custom jersey that says BB on the back.
BB Rexha. BB Rexha. Anyways, this caller called because his ex-fiance is on Summer House.
Maya
which is
Allen.
Like, oh, yay, yay. So they were together for a really long time. They moved to New York together.
They're both in the culinary world. That's right. What's crazy. He went on one reality show and now she's going on another one.
But his was like, I'm going on this show to be like a chef, like to build my name in cooking. And hers is like, I'm going on this show to like maybe fuck a dude and have a free house for the summer. Like, do you? There's been careers launched on less, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit of a different scenario here.
Yeah, yeah. So they're both in the industry, in the culinary industry. On Maya just got a Us Weekly 5 Things to Know About Her, and it's Maya Allen.
It's bleak.
I mean, talking about heteronormativity, it's all, you know, about Kwame.
It should be illegal to publish this, to be honest. Like, it should be like the Bechdel test of Us Weekly. If
it really
like
should be.
More than three of the five items are about a man, we shouldn't post this, you know?
Or just about the partner, you know? Like, if it's
yeah,
about
sorry,
the relationship.
Yes, the partner.
If this is about a relationship, like, no.
You have to get the majority of things to be about them before you're allowed to do it.
Yes.
Only, like, one to two items can be about the peg of the article, which is, like, why we're posting this.
I love this platform of yours. This is a great platform. Maya Allen, five things to know about the Summer House newcomer and her ex-fiancé, Kwame Onwuachi. Listen to this. Number one.
Sure.
She's friends with Paige, which is... I guess you watch Summer House, I don't. So the way it works is when you want to, it's like The Real Housewives, when you want to invite a newbie, then it's like, oh, they're a friend of X. Like if you were on Summer House, you were like, this is my friend Bobby.
The way to bring people onto the show is like this like secret casting that is shown, like they do essentially casting, but then they have to pretend like they're friends with. But I also think at this point they do recommend their friends, you know? So it is a little bit of both, you know?
And you want, I guess, authentic relationships among these people.
Well, you want everybody to have, like, their girly that they can, like, go to like, talk shit about everybody else. So it has to be, like, a friend, you know?
Number one, she's friends with Paige. While Maya is introduced to the group through Paige, whom she met while going out at NYC, it's clear she hit it off with Amanda and Sierra during summer 2021. Quote, you're my favorite person on Summer House, Amanda commented on Maya's Instagram in January. Okay. Number two, also personal. This is about Maya. She's self-employed. Maya previously worked as the director of operations alongside Kwame at Philly Wing Fry restaurant in D.C. Okay, that's
self-employed.
Fine. Self-employed, but then it says she now works as a private chef and founded The Need, K-N-E-A-D, a scratch-made cookie delivery service in NYC. Okay, gonna have to get some of those.
I'm gonna say, sounds great.
Okay.
I'm in.
345, all Kwame. She moved to NYC with her ex, okay? Number four, how she met Kwame. She met him in February 2016 at a pop-up restaurant he worked at in Boston. Number five, the photo is literally just of him. And it says Maya wiped Kwame from her social media profiles. So she's deleted all of his presence from her Instagram because they were engaged, but then they broke up. The other thing that makes me think that it stands to reason that the two of these people could be together is that their relationships, their most recent high-profile relationships, ended at around the same time. Because if you'll recall, Yvonne Orji was also dating someone who was famous, Emmanuel Acho. So they broke up in like late 2019, early 2020.
You, though, you keep saying this, you keep hammering this in because I feel like you think the caller knows something and has an agenda. And
I think the caller has an agenda.
Tipping us off without tipping us off. Like the caller's like, are Yvonne Orji and Kwame dating? Like, oh, interesting. Like, I don't know. I saw it. And it's like, you're telling us that.
Yeah. I feel like the caller might be from like Bleep Bloop PR or something. And was like, I have
bleep,
a plan.
Not Bleep Bloop.
Bleep Bloop PR is being like, I'm going to call Who Weekly and see if this works. And guess what, caller at Bleep Bloop PR? This might be working.
we're not Demois, but it works.
The thing is, I was willing to just like skip this story altogether until Timmy found the photo of them together in 2021. Because I was sort of like, this is nothing. These are just two friends. But then this photo that's recent.
But then you saw his hand, his arm swung around her front, and you said,
she let it linger.
Oh.
Lindsay, have I ever taken a photo of you with you like that?
Okay, but that's
with my hand grazing your stomach, just delicately at a football game. How many times do I have to say I'm allowed to be heteronormative because they're at a football game? Like, come on.
You Give don't count because you're barely putting your arms around people sometimes.
No.
It's like.
No arms around people.
I'm just saying, like, I don't know. But that's okay. You can be the one that says yes, and I can be the one that says I don't know.
Okay. So according to me, they're potentially dating. According to Lindsay, they're just friends.
Okay. Let's move on. I don't want to talk about Summer House anymore. Let's move on.
I took French for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years of my of my life throughout high school and college. And guess what? I'm still not fluent. I want to go to Paris and talk to someone in French, in France, en français, and not have them switch to English.
I was just in a Spanish-speaking country, and man, some of my friends, their language skills, they blew me out of the water. I was just out of my depth. And I said, you know, I really would love to be able to speak as well as these people abroad. What a delightful skill to have to be able to do so. So maybe I need to get into my Rosetta Stone era.
They're the most trusted language learning program. And you can use it on desktop or as an app. They've been trusted for 30 years with millions of users, and they offer 25 languages. They got Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and more. They immerse you. They don't do English translation, so you really learn to speak. You listen. You think in the language. It's very intuitive. You pick a language. You start with words. Then you move on to phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention. And their app has a built-in true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. They're convenient. Like I said, they have a desktop and an app option. And you can have a lifetime membership, which includes all 25 languages for all the trips you're going to take, all the language needs that you have in your life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. It's a steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Who Weekly listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/who. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/who today. I love to do an ad for a podcast hosted by a Who we have literally talked about on the show.
Love that. I love that. I absolutely love that. Welcome to the family.
Welcome to the family. We're going to talk about a new podcast called Jocular, hosted by none other than ER Fightmaster, Tien Tran, and Katie Kershaw. They're comedians, they're writers, they're best friends, and they're obsessed with women's sports. Like a lot of you, I'm sure. They're exploring all things queer, trans, and women forward in the world of sports. And in every episode, they're going to cover the latest games, they're going to debate pressing issues, and they're going to review how they're really horny for basically everyone in the game. You know, you love to see it. Just be honest about it.
You literally love to see it. Friends and experts will join to share their takes on sports ranging from women's basketball to soccer to power slapping.
So tune in every Friday for new episodes of Jocular on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts right now.
Hi, guys. Brooks Barnes, the New York Times, just wrote this article about Bruce Bozzi. Why? Who the fuck is Bruce Bozzi? Thanks. Crunch, crunch, crunch.
Why?
That's so why? Did you read it? That's the profile should tell you why. A good profile is gonna tell you why you're reading it. You know?
Why, Lindsay? Did you read it? Why?
I did. I mean, I knew about a lot of this, but it is funny to have these characters that are written about every 10 years or so as a reminder that they exist and are interesting. Like, yeah. I knew he's still interesting in the same way he was interesting 10 years ago, you know? Like, Bruce Bozzi, he used to run the Palm, those restaurants with the caricatures that mm-hmm. celebrities loved, and is good friends with Andy Cohen and Sarah Jessica Parker, and is married to Brian Lord. Brian Lord, who is Billy Lord's father, who used to mm-hmm. be married to
Carrie Fisher.
That's interesting. Like, I think this profile is to promote his liquor brand, actually, which is doesn't happen till the bottom.
Which is the liquor brand that Andy Cohen got fucked up on New Year's Eve.
Right. You know? But I don't think that this profile does anything else other than say, like, have a bunch of his friends be like, he's a cool guy. The interesting part being the Palm history and his relationship with Carrie Fisher, but they barely even touch on that. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. You're right. What is what do you think is the point of this? Like, what are your thoughts?
I think the point is the liquor. I mean, when we got a call about this, I don't have to play it, but when we were talking about Jordana Brewster's Us Weekly 25 Things, we said, oh, wow, there's weirdly no self-promotion in here. It's just very earnest. There was one thing where she said her favorite liquor brand was some liquor brand. It wasn't hyperlinked. And I went to the liquor brand's website and I didn't see her anywhere on it. So I was like, oh, I guess this is genuine. But no, she is a brand ambassador for that liquor brand. I should have done famously one more Google. So, like, leaving the peg out of the picture, this is just very, like, New York Timesy, because he's a very man about town in New York and he has a ton of New York friends. So it's like, okay, he's best friends with Tom Ford and Barry Diller and Anderson Cooper and Sarah Jessica Parker, and all these people love him so much that they're willing to give Brooks Barnes at the New York Times comment. So, like, it makes sense that they wrote about this. Sure. But, like, the only peg is the liquor, I think.
The thing that I forgot to mention that I think is maybe the most important, that's not true, but one of the most notable things is his husband, Brian Lord, is like an agent. I think we've talked about him. He's like one of the biggest agents in Hollywood, mm-hmm. I believe at CAA or used to be at CAA or whatever. And the reason why Bruce, et cetera, knows all these, everyone's connected to all these celebrities is because Brian represented like all of them. Mm-hmm. And Bruce has this podcast that is off and on that is like interviewing people at lunch. And the first guest was Jennifer Aniston. And why is that? Oh, because, you know, they spent years together trying to become actors. He worked at the Palms and met her when she was like auditioning.
I love that he worked at the Palm because it was his family restaurant.
Yeah. And the whole thing about the Palm was that it was a celebrity watering hole. Like it was always like, let's go hang out at the Palm. Of course, it fell into bankruptcy via getting sued for some reason. They don't really say what, but they don't own it anymore. Mm-hmm. And now he's got to do his celebrity ass kissing elsewhere.
Yeah. I think that maybe this isn't really a peg, but like there is something kind of interesting for our purposes in this profile, because it's like even this guy who kind of has all the pieces doesn't quite get what he really wants, which is to be an actor, to be a successful actor. Like, he's got the money. He's got the proximity to fame. He's got the connections. And yet the thing that he's famous for is being the friend and owning a liquor brand. Like,
can I suggest before we finish, like some other profiles of recent that I thought were good and like define themselves, you know, the profile of Mitski at Vulture, I thought was really good. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody who comes up on this podcast, but we're kind of like, what's there to say? She's great. You know, like her music. Alex wrote a really good profile on her that kind of gets to the crux of some things. So I liked that. And then you were talking about a profile this morning that I ended up reading that I enjoyed, though you had issues, but not issues with the profile itself, just issues with like the framing of her right now.
Of Kathy Griffin.
But I thought it was a good profile, which is Kathy Griffin, who I feel like is almost a patron saint of this pod, but kind of not, weirdly, because when we started this podcast, she was like embroiled in this bullshit. But like spiritually, she kind of is a forefather to this. My Life on the D-List
totally
is very much like the tongue-in-cheek joke that we've been talking about for the whole time, forever. Yeah.
I mean,
you know?
She centered her career on being a very specific type of famous. And it's the type of famous that we love talking about.
Right. Or at least like started trying to be genuinely famous and then realized, oh, I'm this type of famous and I'm going to lean in. Mm-hmm. Right. Shameless famous. And I think Kathy, despite however you feel about whether she's successful or what happened with her, whatever, even though she's friends with other famous people, she still does that thing where she talks shit about famous people and therefore like alienates people that you can tell it hurts her, but she knows that that's her bread and butter, if that makes sense. Like her and Andy Cohen have like a big, famously a feud or whatever, who I don't even remember why, but it's like, those are the sacrifices that she makes. It's like sometimes she'll go to a party and people won't like her, but it's like her career is like talking shit about celebrities. She knows that and she continues to do it.
Yeah. She has been Kathy Griffin for 30 years. Like she has been exactly this person forever, which could be frustrating. My issue with the profile, I think the profile is worth reading. I think it's just like, if you are interested in the discourse surrounding cancel culture, I'm using big air quotes, cancel culture, you should read this profile because I think it gets, it will only make you feel crazier because it maybe accidentally shows how kind of hard to define cancel culture is and cancellation is, because you have this story that is framed very explicitly about being about someone who has been canceled, or as Kathy says, I've been erased. And yet the profile does nothing but sort of run down a list of everything that she's achieved in her career since being allegedly canceled in 2017, where it's like, we have to find new terminology for what happened to her, because what happened to her is not cancellation in like the sense that we've come to believe it is. You have these really objectively successful rich people who are going to be fine getting caught in this echo chamber with other people who have allegedly been canceled, and they just get angrier and angrier and angrier about it, and they misinterpret it, and they like, they learn the wrong lessons from all of these things. And so I just see this profile as like the result of learning weird lessons from everything. And then actually bringing up the Mitski profile in Vulture is interesting, because there's that whole section of the Mitski profile where she's like, I don't want to give you too much. And like Alex is writing, like, when I ask her for like more details about her life, she's like, she kind of closes off. And she's like, becoming more and more famous makes me paranoid because I don't really want to give you, I don't want to give you too much. Like I have to figure out how much I'm comfortable giving and how much I'm comfortable using press. And like, obviously she understands that the more press you get, the more famous you get. So it's like, she's in this stage of her career where she's trying to decide how much she's willing to give of herself. And I think part of her argument is like, I give it in the music and like, that's enough. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that it is. But they're good, like dueling profiles, all of them.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like this profile like made me think, and like obviously is like a good conversation starter for us, because Kathy is such like an interesting, divisive character.
It's frustrating. And I kind of think the things that are frustrating about this have less to do with Kathy Griffin than the way that this profile was framed. But also, she seems to be playing into it. And I think that these profiles only make I think these profiles only make this sort of discourse worse and more irritating, because they keep giving oxygen to this idea that people who are actively working and successful are canceled. And that's not what cancellation is. Like, there are conversations to be had about what cancellation is, because I think everyone's disagreeing.
Well, but then it flips on like, oh, I'm canceled and that's my brand and I make money off that. And it's like, okay, well, that's not what canceled is either. And I wouldn't want Kathy to be part of that narrative, because I think she's better than that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she's not this like disgraceful figure. She pissed Trump off. Mm-hmm. Good.
She pissed
like,
off MAGA people.
Good. Yeah. Great. We love it. So that's why I don't want to have her be in the same breath and have the same attitude as people who I'm like, fuck you, you know?
Just like this profile, she's like, I was erased in 2017. I've been touring internationally ever since. And please come to my new $9 million mansion that I bought 2 years ago in the middle of my cancellation to do a photo shoot for my profile about cancellation. I'm like, okay, give me a fucking break. The segment is called Three Profiles.
I actually love that as a segment idea.
Three profiles.
Three profiles.
Hey, Lindsay and Bobby. So I just saw this video about how one of the girls from Singles Inferno, actually, have you guys even spoken about that? It's like so popular, a Korean show. But one of the girls like wore fake Chanel and she had to like write an apology to the fans to be like, I'm so sorry for wearing fake Chanel. But the way she did it was like she hand wrote a note and then posted a photo of the handwritten note on Instagram. And I've seen a lot of like Korean celebrities do this. Like, not just for apologies, but just, like, to let people know things. Can we bring this to the West? Like, I think that's such, so much better than notes app. Like, a handwritten apology. I want to see, like, celebrities handwriting. Like, thoughts? Has anybody done this? Like, I think it's such a great idea. All right. Grateful, Shana.
Handwritten apologies. Let's make it the new trend. Let's make it the new trend.
Well, I feel like we're brought up a lot when people talk about notes apps, because that was a big notes app apology was like one of the things we talked about for a while when it was first a thing. Now
still
it's kind of like old hat. And a lot of people use notes app for lots of different types of things in a way. And that was bound to happen because it almost went niche to like general. And now it's hard to say like, oh, it's always an apology. Oh, it's always used for that, you know?
Exactly.
But this is a very interesting twist on the matter.
Yes.
Because I didn't know that this was such a kind of institutional thing where in Korea they're doing apologies by hand.
Almost exclusively. So this is all from the Singles Inferno star Song Jia.
Which I am so excited to watch. I was told that this show is a mix of Love Island and Terrace House. Those are my shows. Those are literally my shows. And of course I text our friends, like our my Terrace House fan friends, like, did you hear this? And they were like, oh, we're already done with it. And I'm like, why the fuck did you not tell me? Like, thanks to Timmy. Timmy was the one who was like, oh, this show is this minus this cross this. I don't think Timmy knew about my Terrace House obsession, but talking about relationships while you do the dishes, that's my vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I can't wait to watch.
She had posted some photos of her, like, with...
Yeah, what did she apologize for?
Fake designer goods. And so people got mad at her for posting... I mean, it's very, like, Patrizia Reggiani. I put that in the notes where it's, like, it reminds me of that scene in House of Gucci where she gets really mad at finding all the fake Gucci and, like, losing her shit. So in response to the outrage,
okay,
Song Jia, who has millions of followers on Instagram, like, it's no small number, handwrote an apology letter, took a photo of that apology letter, and then put it on Instagram. And the apology, amazing, according to who translated this, All K-Pop translated it from Korean to English. First, I sincerely apologize to everyone who has been disappointed and hurt because of me. I'm going to honestly explain about the fake designer items that are currently becoming a controversy. Some of the comments currently being made about the fake designer products I wore on social media and on Singles Inferno are true. I'm really sorry. I apologize once again for any situation caused by the infringement of the designer's creations and ignorance of the copyright. As a person with a dream of launching a brand, I will seriously recognize the controversy and reflect deeply.
They're essentially calling her a hypocrite. They're like, you want to sell clothes, you want to have a brand, and you're wearing like fake Gucci. That's like kind of fucked up. I mean, I'm not like pissed about it, but I do understand why that would be something that would, if you're demanding authenticity from people, which I think there's a lot of expectation of that.
Especially if you're starting a brand. You're right. Yeah.
Right.
When I was looking this up, I was like, wait, I was seeing more headlines about Korean celebrities, like Korean reality stars, K-pop stars, who, when they would fuck up publicly, celebrities fuck up publicly all the fucking time,
the
and they apologize about it. That's half of our show. But in Korea, it's very common for the celebrities to apologize using this method, which is not Notes app, which is not a screenshot of a Word document. It is a handwritten apology photographed and uploaded, and it's everywhere. We have like a dozen examples of this just like right here in our notes about times this has happened in the past, you know, 6 years, right? And so I was on a K-pop website.
I'd be nervous to do my handwriting is awful, you know? Like,
yeah, mine is disgusting.
Awful. Just
mine is
fully awful.
Disgusting. I saw this one website. Someone said, we spoke to a Korean linguist, and they said, let me just read what they said. And they said, our ancestors, as in Korean ancestors, believed handwritten letters showed a person's emotions. And I was like, seeing that cited in a lot of places. And I was like, that's kind of like a vague explanation. So we reached out to some friends. We found everyone basically giving the same responses. I'm going to quote all the people, all of the firsthand sources. It's because historically people in Korea believe that handwriting calligraphy was how people truly display their emotions. We're talking like hundreds of years ago, but the tradition has continued where handwriting is seen as a more sincere form of communication. Okay. So it's about sincerity, apparently. It's about showing that, like, no, I'm taking the time to write this for you. It's less that, like, the emotions are evident within the strokes of the hand than it is, like, because I took the time, that shows that I'm being sincere.
I get it. To be fair, the Notes app apology backlash happened pretty quick, where it is now seen as very cynical to do that, like, very disconnected. Yeah. Maybe we do need a new way.
If we're apologizing all the time and those apologies don't necessarily work, why aren't we adjusting our apology method? Like, why do we keep doing the same thing over and over again, which is write these like bullshit notes apologies? Why aren't we switching our methodologies to something else, like handwriting a letter and writing it?
Whether or not we use it, it's just interesting to me that Notes app apologies became such a cultural thing here, and over there they're doing handwritten photos taken and posted to social media, like that there's this kind of like through line through both, that everybody's fucking apologizing for the same shit, you know.
Every celebrity is apologizing
but each culture has a way that it is like trained or quote unquote wants to accept, to receive that apology, to receive that please forgive me language. Like, what, you know, what's the style that kind of best suits the culture to really take it in or not, or something. Like, that's to me what's like fascinating about this.
It's effective to me. Like, I totally understand why this is effective and why, like, psychologically people believe it,
but God knows my handwriting is not ready for prime time.
I'm always impressed when people have good handwriting because mine is disgusting.
Disgusting.
Anyway, let's make this the trend. Let's make this the trend.
Okay. Wait, I have some breaking news.
Oh, no. What?
Okay. Here's the headline. Eminem characters redesigned for a, quote, more dynamic, progressive world, Mars announces. Oh, Are you ready to see what is going...
No.
This is going to... The most notable change will include the green M&M's redesign.
The sexy M&M?
I'm going to protest. Which will exchange the white-heeled go-go boots she was given in 1997 for a cool laid-back sneakers to reflect her effortless confidence. Mars had received criticism for the green M&M's sexy characterization. The green M&M will also be better represented to reflect confidence and empowerment as a strong female and known for so much more than her boots. Are you fucking kidding me? She's an M&M.
They gave the sexy M&M Converse and it's like, now we're feminist. What?
Wait, I'm not done. You're going to cry. The green M&M and the brown M&M will have a more friendly relationship, showcasing force supporting women. The two characters' dynamic will have them together throwing shine and not shade. Amina, sue them, the company said. The two characters have sometimes been at odds in advertisements, but they have also been seen as friends. Haven't they been seen as lovers? Aren't they gay?
Yeah, people were like, oh, are they lesbians?
Yes. Mars also added that the brown M&M's heels will be lowered to a professional heel height. Like, she's wearing a pair of, like, white pumps. This is a travesty. I am so mad.
I wonder if this is just Eminem being like, we can't deal with like chatter around sexuality and gender.
I know, but I'm so mad because the green M&M is like,
it's disappointing.
It brings our culture together. This M&M is sexy. Like, why?
No, I'm boycotting M&Ms. Let them be lesbians. This is annoying.
This is so annoying. Let them be lesbians.
They lowered, oh my God, this side by side. They went from the Alexis Nyers pink Louboutins to BB Kitten heels. Like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Not BB Kitten heels.
And I cannot believe the green M&M went from go-go boots to... Wait, they're literally like Converse. They're just sneakers.
I cannot with this entire thing.
This is so upsetting.
I'm sorry, really upsetting. I knew this would hit a nerve.
I'm sorry. It says that this is their attempt to have better gender representation. What? No.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't.
You derailed us, but no. No, I'm never buying M&M's again. Oh. I'm not buying M&M's again until the brown M&M is in calf-defining pumps, not kitten heels. Until the green M&M gets her go-go boots back, I will not buy M&Ms. No, fuck this.
I know! She's not legend without her go-go boots. I
hate this. Next call. Lindsay, when you came over to my apartment last week for dinner and dancing, courtesy of Lala, did it smell like beef or did it smell like cat litter?
It smelled like beef. That's what you were cooking.
That's what I was cooking. It smelled like beef, you know?
It smelled like beef.
It smelled delicious in my apartment. It smelled like all the yummy stuff I was cooking, and it didn't smell like cat poo-poo or cat pee-pee because I used Pretty Litter. And nothing beats Pretty Litter's ability to instantly trap odor. It's ultra-absorbent, it's lightweight, it's low-dust, and 1 6-pound bag works for up to 1 month. Gives me peace of mind. I know I'm going to have people over, and then they're like, it smells like cat in here. My apartment doesn't smell like cat. That's all you want.
No, it doesn't.
You can pick up the cat and love the cat and hug the cat, but doesn't smell like cat.
No.
Their crystals also change color to indicate early signs of potential illness in your cat, like UTIs, kidney issues, and more. This is, in my experience, this is not in the copy, especially helpful if you have a senior cat that's getting older and could have like weird medical issues. The litter crystals will change color and tell you that there might be something wrong so that when you go to the vet, you can say, hey, the litter changed color. Could be this. Check on this. So helpful. And if that is not enough for you, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door. You never run out. You won't have huge kitty litter bags taking up space, especially if you live in a small apartment. And even better, you don't have to lug the huge tubs from the store to your car, up the stairs, blah, blah, blah. Comes right to you. Go to prettylitter.com/who to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/who to save 20% on your first order. prettylitter.com/who. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, Lindsay and Bobby. I just saw a story about how Ashley, I, and Jared from The Bachelor Universe have planned to name their son Dawson, and they really want the public to know he's named after Jack Dawson from Titanic. But of course, the first name that jumped to my mind was Dawson Leary from Dawson's Creek. So I just wanted to pose the question to you guys, who's the Vemire character when it comes to the name Dawson? Dawson Leary or Jack Dawson? I would argue Dawson Leary is actually Vemir just because Dawson's actually his first name, but I do understand that Jack Dawson is perhaps one of the Vemiest like fictional characters of all time. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on it and like what name or what character came to your mind first when you heard that they were going to name their baby Dawson. Crunch, crunch.
Dawson's Creek comes first, not Jack Dawson.
They're telling everyone this. Do you know where they revealed this?
Where? Oh, Amazon Live Amazon show. Live.
They revealed this on their Amazon Live spawn. Isn't that so upsetting?
Absolutely not shocking at all. I think they've revealed like everything on their Amazon Live stream show.
I've been weird about saying the name out loud just because I don't, like,
it's already a name. It's not,
I
like,
I know. It's not like it belongs to me. Isn't that funny? Like, what?
I don't know why you feel such ownership about it.
I do. I feel a lot of ownership about it. Is that normal to feel ownership over your child's name before you reveal it? I, like, don't want people to, like, I want it to still remain a not so popular name.
I don't think it's going to increase in popularity just because we named our child.
I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but there have been people who've guessed. Anyway, okay, I'm saying it because you guys are going to get impatient.
Too late.
His name is Dawson Dimitri Haven.
Dawson Dimitri Haven.
Someone else called about this last week, but we didn't talk about it because we don't talk about them every single week. But Ashley, I, and Jared also opened a coffee shop in Rhode Island. They're doing everything.
What's their coffee shop called? It's called like, it's like their mom's name or her mom's name.
It's
or
like
something.
A family biz or whatever that they all opened up together. And they've got like signs about The Bachelor and like, I was like, wow, small business. That's a new one.
Audrey's Coffee House and Lounge. Audrey's Coffee House and Lounge. The coffee shop is named after Ashley's mother. A poster of Audrey Hepburn hangs on the wall near a portrait of their dog, Lois. Okay. You can't put a photo of Audrey Hepburn in your coffee shop named after your mother, a normal lady named Audrey. That is confusing and that is fucked up. That's really disrespectful to your mother. That's so confusing, Ashley. My dad's name is Chris. That's like me opening up a coffee shop called Chris Cafe and then putting a photo of Chris Pine over the register and being like, I named this after my daddy. What?
I just think it's cute that they're balancing their like crass Amazon live stream with a real life coffee shop. And that kind of balances it out. I think that's cute. Opening a coffee shop? Come on. That's like a negative earning business thing, you know? You got to respect that.
Okay, so they went on Amazon Live and they were like, our baby's name is Dawson. And what they have to do is they have to make it clear that they named their baby after Jack Dawson from Titanic and not Dawson Leary from Dawson's Creek. And isn't that so funny that they have to, they know that that confusion is going to be made because those are two perfect millennial touch points? Like,
it just could be so either one, and no one's going to think Dawson as in Jack Dawson, which is like, I guess, hilarious, but people are going to think Dawson's Creek, you know?
Their full statement is, this is Jack Dawson from Titanic inspired. We are a little concerned, not concerned, but we want people to know that this is not after James Van Der Beek's character. This is after a Leonardo DiCaprio character. Titanic has always been my favorite movie of all time. I was 10 when I saw it.
If you had to name your kid after anyone in Titanic, though, what would it be?
After Mr. Andrews, because he's honorable.
Mr. Andrews, he sunk the boat!
Thomas Andrews Finger, yeah.
He sunk the boat.
Okay, what are my options here?
I don't know. You tell me.
What if I just name my kid Francis Fisher, no matter what they are? Francis Fisher Finger. Did you know Cal is short for Caledon?
No, that's crazy.
I'm naming my kid First Officer Murdoch, because then I can say, take her to see Mr. Murdoch, constantly. I'm either naming my kid First Officer Murdoch, Fabrizio, or Old Rose.
It's good. It's good you're not having a kid. Old Rose.
First name Old, middle name Rose, last name Finger. Old Rose Finger. This is my kid Old, as in Old Rose. Okay, if you had to pick a name, if you had to name your kid after Titanic, you asked me this.
Iceberg Weber.
That's perfect. That's better for this, because then you go, I know you're probably thinking that I'm naming my kid after the lettuce, but I'm actually naming it after the iceberg that sunk the Titanic.
It's not the lettuce. It's after the Titanic. Don't be confused.
Hi, Lindsay Bobby. Can you rate the Euphoria girlies from Who to Them or Them to Who? Obviously, like, Zendaya is the themmiest, and maybe Sydney Sweeney, who's Cassie, maybe she's second, but the other girlies, like Hunter Schafer, Barbie Ferreira, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her last name right, Maude Apatow, Nepotism, and Alexa Demi. So out of all our girlies, all of our stunning girls, who to them? Okay, crunch, crunch.
Zendaya, Hunter Schafer, Sydney Sweeney, Maude Apatow, Alexa Demi, Barbie Ferreira, Storm Reid. Who to them?
This is hard because it is kind of a little bit of a mush, and they're kind of a lot of them are in the same like spot of their career.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think Alexa Demi and Barbie are kind of at the same spot in terms of like buzzy, written about on Nylon magazine. If you watch Euphoria, you know them. Fashion girlies on Instagram, but like still kind of like up and, you know, this is still maybe the main thing they're known for.
And even though Alexa Demi has been quote unquote around for like 10 years, she's just been lingering, you know?
Right. But that's like, yeah. Wow. Okay. Lingering. And then I would say moving up from there, you have Maude Apatow, who is just a little above because of the Apatow thing and mm-hmm. was in like her parents' movies, you know, mm-hmm. as a young
name recognition.
Kid.
Yeah.
Then I would say, I feel like Storm Reid, though, is above like Hunter and Sydney because Storm has been in like, a lot of stuff.
Storm's just been in more stuff. I think that Sydney and Hunter are at the same exact level.
Sydney and Hunter are like neck and neck buzzy, though.
And I think that Storm is 1 millimeter above them.
Yeah.
Because Sydney Sweeney is what? Like, Sydney Sweeney's literally just like Euphoria and White Lotus in terms of things that have gotten her buzz. And Storm Reid has been around for so much longer getting buzz as like, oh, look at this child star who's like getting more and more prominent roles. As someone who doesn't watch Euphoria, I'm seeing Storm a lot in a lot of places. I'm not seeing the other Euphoria cast members in a lot of other places.
Yeah, totally. It just feels very contained, even though I know they're like their aesthetics are taking over youth culture every time Euphoria returns.
So we're going right now. We have Barbie Ferreira and Alexa Demi neck and neck on the bottom. Next up, we have Maude Apatow. Next up, we have Sydney Sweeney and Hunter Schafer neck and neck in the middle. Then we have Storm Reid. And then above them, Zendaya, which is inarguable at this point.
Inarguable.
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 Okay.
Hey, Lindsay Bobby. Long time, second time. Just had a question about Maneskin. Are they a who or a them? I ask because I just came back from Argentina, heard them a bunch, like playing in bars and stuff while I was there. They obviously had the big song that was on TikTok with the begging cover. And they're on the Coachella lineup, and so I don't really know what to think. Who are them? And then I guess, like, secondly, who has been the biggest, and I don't know, it's not Eurovision time yet, but, you know, we're still a couple months away. But you guys were talking about the Albania contestant, and it got me thinking, like, who's the biggest, like, Eurovision then, like, in recent memory? I don't know who it would be, but really need to know. Scarjo Pizza Roll.
Måneskin,
yeah.
And he's right about, the caller is correct. It's like, it is a little bit like unusual and surprising to have a Eurovision winner break out in this way. Mm-hmm. We haven't had this since ABBA, Celine Dion, et cetera, et cetera. Even though, like, ABBA probably, right? Like, Katrina and the Waves, Walking on Sunshine. But some
Katrina
of that was
Katrina
and
the Waves, maybe, yeah. I'm scrolling through a list of winners, and it's like, Celine Dion really doesn't count, because Celine Dion would have been famous anyway.
Right, like, well, kind of. It's really, ABBA is really, like, the crown jewel of Eurovision, and, like, kind of their greatest export, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of, like, stuff that gets really internationally big. Eurovision stars do stay pretty famous in Europe. I mean, they still really do. Like, you see, like, that guy Duncan Lawrence, remember his song Arcade or something, that slow song that was so lame, that was all over the place. Like,
Conchita Wurst is famous.
Yeah.
Loreen, people still mention Loreen because that song is so iconic.
Well, not really. I mean, Euphoria, that song, but less Loreen. But I'm just saying, like, the fact that they're playing SNL, they did a cover of that song and it got really big on TikTok. Like, they're doing the most.
They are.
Definitely who's, though.
Yeah, they're definitely who's. That's the thing. That's the long-winded way of saying they're definitely who's. And also, like, it's more likely for a guest host to be a them than it is for a musical guest. I just feel like musical guests use them as launching pads in a different way than hosts. Mm-hmm. That's a long-winded way of saying it's more likely for you not to know who a musical guest is than for you to not know who a guest host is. Do you think that's fair?
Well, it's like music culture is a little bit more youth culture-y forward than, like, other stuff. Like,
yeah.
the actors are promoting, like, big tentpole projects that usually you hear about versus, like, music where it's like they always want somebody new and flashy and fresh. Yeah. That's more less of, like, you know, they want less of, like, what you've heard of.
You outgrow the musical guests and you sort of grow into the guest hosts is maybe a fair thing to say. Maybe.
Totally. Maybe. Yeah, sure. Sure.
Hi, Lindsay Bobby. I called earlier about Melanie Lynskey, who are them, but I think the better question is, can you rank the Yellow Jackets ladies from who to them? So Melanie Lynskey, Juliette Lewis, Christina Ricci, and Tawny Cypress, who I didn't know before this show. And I also think it's interesting that Christina Ricci gets the with credit and Juliette Lewis gets the and, which to me means that Juliette Lewis is probably the most Demi, or at least with the most name recognition, even though I think Melanie Lynskey probably in the next couple years might transition from who to them. She feels very cuspy, if not already a them to me. Okay, thanks. Crunch, crunch.
Melanie Lynskey, who we've talked about before, is like a Sarah Paulson type actress. You have to understand. It's like somebody who's been around, done everything, kind of character, but now getting that, like, kind of revitalization because TV itself is needing more, or is, like, finding better places, better roles for
women in their 40s.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like it is. Mm-hmm. It just reminds me of Kathy. Oh my God, I almost said Kathy Najimy, but I meant what's her face? I love Dick Star. What's her name?
Catherine
Mrs.
Hahn.
Mrs. Fletcher. It reminds me of Catherine Hahn. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, oh, Catherine Hahn. Where'd she come from? It's like, check any rom-com from the 90s. Mm-hmm. She's in it. She's playing the friend. You know, it's just, it's a fascinating, and I think Melanie Lynskey falls squarely in that space.
Mm-hmm. Spent the early part of her career as a supporting character, and now she's mm-hmm. like, I'm the lead. And she's a Kiwi. Right.
She's a Kiwi. She's dating Kiwi. Jason Ritter.
They're married.
They're married.
And she used to be married to one of your number one faves. Of course, you know that.
Who?
Jimmy Simpson.
I love Jimmy Simpson. My favorite interview.
Melanie Lynskey, Juliet Lewis, Christina Ricci, Tawny Cypress. Who to them? Oh, and to answer the question about and or with, I think we've talked about this before. It's like and or withs are always weird contractual things. The way that I've understood it, it's like an ego thing where it's like they negotiate a and or a with into the credits.
The and or the with. Right.
It doesn't have to mean the same thing everywhere. The easiest explanation that I've been told when I've tried to ask people who know better than I do, it's like it's just specific wants from those actors. It's the actors being like, I want an and or a with, or specifically, I want an and a with. And I think the reason it's like, and Juliet Lewis with Christina Ricci is because you don't want to have two of the same ones. And so they found some sort of agreement where Juliet got the with and Christina got the and.
They both provide a similar function to the show, you know? I mean, I think before the show itself was like, oh, everyone loves and it's good. Having them in it felt a little bit like
anchors.
Well, obviously they're good, but it's also like, these are the names. These have to be the names. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Juliet Lewis and Christina Ricci make sense as the with and the and because they're definitely the two most famous of those four women.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I think who to them? I think we start with Tawny Cypress, Thaisa, Melanie Lynskey, Shauna. Juliet Lewis, Natalie, Christina Ricci, Misty.
You're saying Ricci edges out Lewis?
Yeah, now that I'm saying it, I'm not sure if that's fair.
It's really hard.
It's really, really, really hard. Wow. Ricci gives me personally a little more of a tingle.
A tingle?
Even though I think that Juliet Lewis is a much better actor.
I do too. I think Juliet Lewis has been around longer and is more like involved within like Hollywood lore. Uh-huh. But I also feel like Ricci.
That name, Christina Ricci. Christina Ricci's just that person that it's like, oh, we're all rooting for you. We're all rooting for you to like transition into Christina adult fame Ricci. Successfully. And it's like Juliet Lewis kind of already has done that.
Yeah.
Not to any sort of like bombastic extent.
Well, Christina Ricci is waiting, and I think this is always the narrative, but Christina Ricci is waiting for her comeback moment in this weird way, and I feel like Yellow Jackets is it. And comeback not even like has to win an Oscar, but just like everybody was like, we love Christina Ricci, and then she went away for a while, and it's like, what happened to Christina Ricci? And it's like, oh, she's in a new show, and the show is good. Like, that's, or because she was doing those weird shows where she was like on Lifetime playing like Lizzie Borden, and I was like, no one cares, stop doing this, you know? Mm-hmm. It wasn't satisfying people asking, where is Christina Ricci, if that makes sense.
I'm gonna throw Juliet Lewis up at the top. Yeah, I think Juliet Lewis is gonna edge out Christina Ricci, but I think they're both thems. I think that we have two who's on the bottom and two thems at the top.
I agree.
Anyway, I think that answers it. And if you want to hear us talk more about Yellow Jackets, come to our Patreon. We're going to talk about it this weekend.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/WhoWeekly. And I think with that, we're done. We've been recording for over 2 hours, and I got to edit this down to like a solid 75.
You can tell I'm like zoning out.
Minutes of this.
I'm zoning out. I'm still pissed about the green M&M. I'm still thinking about her. Give me her boots.
Thank you for listening to another episode. Thank you to Katie and Eric of The Who's for writing our theme song, our Rita theme song. Thank you to Timmy, our research and editorial assistant, for researching and assisting. Thank you to our patrons. We talked about them. Thank you to everyone who rates and reviews us on Apple Podcasts. We love your ratings and reviewings, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Keep calling in at 619 Who Them. Bye.
Bye.
Hey. Hey.
Iceberg Weber.
Hello. I'm calling because I was at LAX yesterday with my husband, and he was in the security line. I was not with him because I have pre-check and he doesn't, whatever. And he was behind a celebrity, and he spent the next full hour trying to figure out who it actually was. He says he first noticed because she had a beautiful, expensive coat and a platinum Rolex, and she was with her adult age daughter. And while we sat waiting for our flight to board, he was Googling things like actresses in their 50s, actresses who are blondes. And finally, when he Googled actresses with a raspy voice, we realized that it was Tia Leone. I just thought that was kind of an iconic way to recognize an actress. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, Lindsay, Bobby, medium time. I just had to pause the pod and call with my one and only cool claim to fame that I shamelessly have to do anytime anyone brings up contact, which is say that I was in it as an 11-year-old growing up in Washington, D.C., who desperately wanted to be an actor. I got a featured extra role in Contact, and I got to meet Matthew McConaughey and Jodie Foster, and they set up a green screen on the National Mall of Washington, D.C., and I screamed Ellie Ellie, which was Jodie Foster's character's name, in, like, sub-zero temperatures for hours, and it was the highlight of my prepubescent life, and it is the only fun party story I have now as a 30-something. Oddly, that movie is beloved by our generation, and I don't think anyone else even knows what it is. Okay, great. Love you, love you. ScarJo pizza roll. Bye-bye.
Hi, Who Weekly. Long time. I just had to pause the latest episode to point out that Bobby refused to spoil Golden Girls, which came out a while ago, but pretty openly readily spoiled the Jurassic Park movie. So, I don't know. I just thought it was funny and, I mean, understandable. Sometimes, bye!
Hi, Bobby and Lindsay. This is Katie. Remember when you were talking about Boursin cheese a couple weeks ago? It made me really sad because cheese makes my stomach hurt. But it reminded me how much I loved it. And I was at Trader Joe's last night, and they sell dairy-free Boursin. And I needed to share this because it's not fair of me to keep this for the dairy-free hooligans. So Trader Joe's dairy-free Boursin, I'm eating it right now. It's really good. Crunch, crunch. Lindsay Weber, podcaster.
I'm 24 years old and just went to the JoJo Siwa concert, and I can confidently say that it is the best concert I've ever been to in my life. So, that's it. That's the call. Crunch, crunch.
Hi, Lindsay, Bobby. Pausing the podcast to recommend my absolute favorite Caesar salad that I absolutely would ignore Madonna for, which is, and this is really just a call for you guys in Brooklyn, but, the smoked trout Caesar at Pizza Moto is, like, I dream of it weekly, and I could eat it every day for the rest of my life. So go get that and fuck Madonna. Bye.
Today's episode of Who Weekly is brought to you by The CW. New series Naomi airs Tuesdays at 9, 8 central, or you can stream free next day on The CW app.